Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left my good friend, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello, listeners. So glad you're tuning in.
And Shireen, why don't you introduce who we have on the seat that's not on the right, but that is here with us.
Well, this is fun because normally when we do this show, it is two Republicans and me on the left. But now we have with us our mayor, my mayor, not yours, I guess, of Salt Lake City, Aaron Mendenhall. Aaron, thank you so much. It is so exciting to have a mayor. It is so wonderful to be able to talk about the issues that are happening in what I think about. I mean, there are many corners of the state that I love, but I think about this as kind of the heart of the state in some ways. It's our capital city, and we are thrilled to have you.
Thank you for having me. I like being triangulated between the two of you here.
It's great. It's great. Mayor, we want to just get to know you better. I feel quite a kinship with you, a friendship with you. But for our listeners, give us a little bit more background, just the 2 minutes of who Mayor Mendenhall is, what your background is.
My background is as a Utah transplant at the age of 7.
Nice.
I was born into a double-wide trailer with two super loving parents in Arizona.
Okay.
Moved here when my father was diagnosed with cancer so he could travel less and took a different job. And grew up
and because of the health system here is when you say travel less or no.
He worked for Motorola and traveled internationally when I was a child and found a job with Eaton Kenway, which is where the University of Utah has had a building for several years.
What I call the Eaton Kenway building. Love it.
And now we're turning it into a perpetual housing. So it's kind of a soft spot for me as a city person. But I grew up in Sandy, went to Alta High School.
Love it.
Went to University of Utah. Many times and for very long periods of time because the U didn't mind.
Yeah.
And so I have both my bachelor's and master's degree from the University of Utah, women's studies, and which turned into gender studies. And then I have a master's in science and technology from the College of Engineering up there.
Tell me a little bit about what you studied in your master's.
In that program, which is a fantastic program, I'd looked at urban studies, I'd looked at master's of public policy, and I was far more intrigued by this science and technology path because I love the hard sciences. Yeah. I did an environmental science focus in this program, and the majority of the classes have to be hard sciences. So you get to dive in on everything from urban ecology to atmospheric science and other things. And then the others are kind of MBA style. Like, how do you manage across different teams from communications to the scientists and be able to make sense of a vision and see that reflected in the work that comes out.
Shireen, isn't this fascinating?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
off air, I said to Shireen, I love the mayor's academic background. I think you would have been a great professor. You still could do that,
That's
by the way.
That's so nice of you to say, Natalie.
Well, I find you.
I have no idea what I'm doing next, so I'll add that to my list.
I find you very articulate. And what you just said, I didn't really know all of that. But when you say that you have sort of an MBA in science and technology, that's probably a pretty good background for a mayor.
I found it to really relate because, especially as a capital city where we have, you know, 17 different major teams out there, we run an airport. We run the public utilities of water, parks, libraries, streets, 4,000 employees. There's a lot
largest
of
city
collaboration.
Yeah, largest city in a city whose population more than doubles every day as people come into the city, right?
It's dynamic.
Pretty. Mayor, we can go so many places, but I want to just, what is it that made you put your name out there and go through the crucible of an election, first for the city council and then for mayor? And I say that as Shireen's done it.
Yeah.
I've never done it.
More than once.
We and I'm
like
older
to.
Than both of you.
I've been asking Natalie for a long time.
And I spend a lot of time with elected leaders, and I've never had that bug.
Mm. I think Governor Gochner has such a good ring to it.
It sounds good, right?
Oh, you guys, come on. What was it that, what was the seed in you?
Foolishness, probably.
Okay. Naive. No. I mean, because that's one of the reasons that keeps me out is I know too much.
I completely get that now. I was really into community organizing. I was an activist.
And then, when was this? Like what year?
This was, let's see. So my oldest is 19 and he was about 2 when I started.
Yeah.
So 17 years ago. And I was with Utah Moms for Clean Air, and eventually they hired me as their first and only employee at the time. And then we merged, a bunch of us who were, myself and board members, some of the board members for Moms said, we want to be more of a moderate voice on air quality that can use science to compel policy rather than the moral case that we were really making as Utah Moms. Now, I always want to acknowledge that activism usually creates the space for policy change by getting the attention and giving the voice to the concerns of the people. And I think that we as a people succeeded in making the space for policy conversations around air quality because of activism.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, we've formed Breathe Utah after a couple more years. And I really found that even as a younger woman back in those days, mm-hmm. and who was kind of a tree hugger and mm-hmm. had has tattoos. And mm-hmm. I always describe myself as young, no money, friends with no money, swearing, and no master's degree at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't see myself in elected office. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, laughable,
mm-hmm.
but I've always had an interest in being at the crux of difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't shy away from listening and mm-hmm. letting myself be changed.
Was your family political? Did you have political debates like in your household growing up? Or
yes, in a way. My mm-hmm. father was pretty engaged in civic life in Phoenix.
Interesting.
Not once we came up here.
Yeah.
And I think losing him as an older mentor that I once had would say, "You're full of piss and vinegar, Aaron."
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, losing my dad at a young age and not really having a big family support structure. Yeah, I had some anger in me that I fueled toward my opinions on certain things.
Cleaning up the air.
In our room.
I think it's an interesting entry point. And I think those experiences that we have, I mean, I think, you know, I ran for office after my mom died because I was just basically incensed that our healthcare system is as broken as it is.
Yeah.
And so I think we have these moments where we're kind of born out of experience or frustration or grief.
Mm-hmm.
And you look around and you're like, wow, a lot of other people have this too. I don't think everyone makes as unhinged decisions as I've made, but I certainly think there's something about those moments that test our sense of place and mm-hmm. connectivity that drive our politics.
You two both bring up a parental death as being part of what, you know, got you into the public realm a little bit. In my case, I didn't have that, but I had very active parents, particularly my mother, in thinking about public life.
Yeah.
She was an avid reader of Newsweek and Time. She read with me, I think in like fifth grade, you know, The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Snolzitsyn. I remember her reading me The Diary of Anne Frank and things like that.
She wanted you to know.
Yeah, she did not finish a college degree. That's not unusual for someone of her generation. But she had self-taught.
Yeah.
And she passed that on to me.
For it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mayor Mendenhall, you have some leadership lessons in all of this. So you are a community organizer, an activist, and then you're in the city council. And I know you, and then a mayor, but I know you to be very dignified in your leadership. I know of you to be very open-minded, a great listener, someone who's also pretty bold. And I could give more, you know, descriptions, but have you learned some lessons along the way to pass on to our listeners?
Thanks, Natalie. I think because I'm still in the work and it's so constant that I appreciate you asking the question. It requires me to zoom out a little bit from the day-to-day that I operate in. And I would say a couple things come to my mind. One is that you can do it.
Mm.
That this country, democracy, needs you, whoever you are out there. We are absolutely unique in the world, in the history of the world, for being a nation that is where the power is held by the people. And I know we could do an entire show talking about those dynamics that are at play federally right now. But this conversation of how things are going and how they should be going requires your voice.
Mm-hmm. And you can do it.
And you can do it. And there is a place for you to step in.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Early in my career, I went to a training that someone from Franklin Covey, a woman, gave a training on public presentations. And it's interesting to me that I went to that training and she taught me a principle. Confidence is an act.
Yeah.
That was the principle she taught me. That that when you do public speaking, you just act like you're comfortable and it works.
It works. So some would call it fake it till you make it.
Yeah, yeah. But I bring that up because you know, what you just shared is part of that. You can do it, and you just have to
show up.
Show up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and act the part. And before you know it, you are that part.
The way I put it to younger people, and one of my favorite things in this role is to engage with kids and young adults. And I tell them, show up, be willing to mm-hmm. show up.
Yeah.
Where you see a need, where you see a gap.
Yeah.
Then second, be willing to be awkward. And I don't mean unsafe,
mm-hmm.
but be willing to be at the edge of your experience, at the edge of your comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
Be willing to be the only person there that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third part is to love yourself for doing it. Because we're gonna, especially at the edge of our comfort, we're gonna make mistakes or things we think back on later and go, oh my gosh, why did I say that? Or why didn't I do that? You gotta love yourself for mm-hmm. putting yourself at the place of growth. And I love trees. We plant a lot of trees in my administration. I take lessons from trees.
Mm-hmm.
They grow from the tips.
Mm-hmm.
They don't grow from the deep base.
Mm-hmm.
They grow at those tender, awkward little edges.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I try to put myself in this leadership role, to be at the edge of my comfort. That's the only place I'm going to be able to learn from the communities that I'm trying to be a public servant to.
Yeah, really well said. Hey, in our next segment, we're going to talk about some Salt Lake City initiatives, maybe even a little bit about the 2034 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games.
Sound
great. Good? Okay.
Yeah.
Stay tuned, everybody. Natalie Gochter with Mayor Mendenhall and Shireen Gorbani.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gorbani on the left with special guest
Salt Lake City Mayor Erin Mendenhall
and Natalie Gochter in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are talking to the mayor about Salt Lake City in this segment. And Mayor, let's just go through, I call it lightning round of a lot of the things happening in the city.
There indeed is.
And I'll start off by saying, and Shireen, you should add a little color commentary too.
Okay.
The capital city belongs to all of Utah. It's our front room.
Yeah.
It's our gathering place.
Yeah, that's
It's
right.
where our international airport is.
Yeah.
It's where our transportation system connects. It's where
huge
business connects.
Huge economic activity.
It's
culture,
our seat of government,
culture.
Arts and entertainment, culture. Give us your quick introduction to Salt Lake City, and then we'll go through some initiatives.
Okay. So I think people, if you're a longtime listener, you might know, I grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota, on the edge of town. Really had very little kind of investment in, it's a small town. It's a small town. And since then, I've really been living in a lot of capital cities.
Mm.
I lived in Lincoln, Nebraska before coming here. I lived in Chișinău, Moldova, as a Peace Corps volunteer. And the thing about this city is I do feel so, I mean, not a lot of people came to visit me in Bismarck, but I'm so proud when I get to bring my friends. I just had a reunion of Peace Corps volunteers that came and spent a long weekend with me to bring people here, to have people see our valley, to have people experience our city. Of course, as a person who's been in public service, I have things I would love to see, ways that I could see it improved. But I'm always so proud of the beauty of the opportunities to engage with art. Again, you know, like I'm a big fan of the whale, like just spinning the friends around the whale. They find it, you know, delightful.
Spinning the friends around the whale.
There are, like riding bikes through our city, taking scooters, being downtown, moving on foot in downtown. And I live right on the edge of downtown, is really a nice experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think that breaks down the further out we get, which is true in many cities. But I just really am proud to be a Salt Laker, and I really love showing it off.
This is that term, topophilia.
Yeah.
Love of place.
Yeah.
You love this place.
I love it.
Yeah. So, Mayor, we're going to go through these things. But when you're at the, I don't know what you call it, the League of Mayors, what do you call the
there's
association?
There's a couple. The U.S. Conference of Mayors, and there's also the National League of Cities.
Okay, yes. When you're at those things and you give a quick introduction to Salt Lake City, how do you describe it?
I usually say, how many of you have been to Salt Lake City? And, you know, a fraction of the hands will go up. And I will say to the rest of you, it is not what you probably think it is. We're different than the stereotype of Utah and Salt Lake City, which are usually, I think, rolled into one for people who've never experienced our state or the city. And I'll go through some of the statistics that make Salt Lake City surprising to folks who have never dug in here, like our access to the outdoors, our growing diversity, our economic prosperity over now almost two decades of leading
growth
the nation.
Growth in the urban core.
Growth in the urban core. Yeah. Best downtown recovery coming out of the pandemic by a long shot and for a long time. Our growing sports scene, hosting the games again in 2034.
Yeah.
You know, a doubling downtown residential population over the last 5 years alone. Our environmental focus, that our city government operations run off of 85% renewable energy. And these are the kind of characteristics I think that people don't think of when they haven't been here before.
Yeah, really beautiful. All right. So let's start with the Power District. Just going out towards the airport. What's going to happen in the next, 5 years there?
Well, I think everybody in the state has their fingers crossed that we're going to get a Major League Baseball team there. And what the Larry H. Miller group and the state of Utah have put together from a legislative and financial package perspective really gets us pretty close. And I say us as a state whole to being able to say yes if that opportunity comes along. Of course, that would be the Larry H. Miller group that would do it. But the community wants it too. By and large, the Westside community and Salt Lake City has been saying, bring us the big investment. Please, the West Side is hungry for this kind of anchor activation.
And what a location. I just think it's such a, you know, the fact that it's between the airport and downtown.
Yeah, there's nothing in the
transportation
nation like it.
Yeah, the transportation assets
right next
to it. It's
already a transportation hub. And the proximity to the Fair Park, which is, of course, a community asset, but it's one of those that's only active a handful of days relative to the entire year.
Yeah.
So big opportunities. I know that the development's coming, whether or not the Major League Baseball team does. And the Miller family is deeply invested in the West Side, as Larry and Gail spent some of their own lives on the West Side. So I think all good things coming there.
Shereen, you jump in here if you want to add anything. How about the Sports and Entertainment District downtown, Convention District downtown?
And culture.
Culture
and Sports,
district.
Entertainment, culture, convention.
Seek.
Also unlike anything else. So I describe it in two quick ways. One is that as Salt Lakers, we already have been deeply invested in the Utah Jazz and the Delta Center since day one, since Larry H. Miller and Ted Wilson went to New Orleans and brought the Utah Jazz back here. So the city, through the Community Reinvestment Agency, owns the land under the Delta Center. We've been doing tax increment to help pay for some of the improvements over time. And we know that it's a huge benefit to our economy. Over 80% of our busiest downtown days are when the Delta Center has an event going on. And thanks to the Smith Entertainment Group, they've doubled the number of active days in the Delta Center. So they brought in more events outside of NBA, adding about 80 days for hockey. Our economic engine downtown is humming, even as driving pylons over there. The second part is there's also nothing quite like this anywhere in the country. You've got entertainment districts, but you don't have anywhere that has two major cultural anchors, which we have in Umoca and Abravanel Hall, that are intentionally being incorporated into the future of this district and the county with the convention center. So we're looking at something that is unlike and really bigger and richer than any other district in the nation.
You feeling any better about it these days, Shereen?
No, I don't love it. But I understand
I was reading your body language
here,
during
and
that.
The majority of my issues were with basically, I would have preferred to see a different way that the financing came together, right? We've talked about it many times on the show. But I also have to say, I live with the reality that I'm in, though I sometimes would like not to. And would like to see, right, something come together that really feels like we have that direct tie back to like how we benefit as Salt Lakers, right? Like I'm frustrated sometimes when I think about the investments there. And when I often say on this program, we have really big problems that feel like we could solve.
Yeah.
And we aren't
with
solving
that
them.
Funding.
Yeah.
Right.
We aren't solving them.
Right.
So those are the places where I just get frustrated. But I also have to say I had such a hilarious and just like underwhelming experience with All-Star Weekend. And I really hope that when we're orienting ourselves around an event like or reimagining this space like this, I hope that we're reimagining it first and foremost for the people who really live here and not as, not as this like, oh, you come in, you dip in, you enjoy the California Pizza Kitchen and you leave. Like, it, I really want it to feel oriented around the kinds of people who live here, reflect our culture here, you know, like many cultures here, and feel like a place that's kind of for us all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I'm worried that won't come together, but I would love that. You know, I would love to see that.
I know you have other subjects, okay. But I just have to respond a little bit to this. I think that we would have liked to see the financing come together differently. We are the number one investor in this project between the state, the county, and the city. City's number one. The fact that state leaders said, no, we want this in Salt Lake City should be profound in the ears of Salt Lakers, because they have not said that.
Yeah.
About a lot of other big decisions.
Well, they're happy to force many decisions on us, actually.
We wanted this decision. Yeah, the biggest thing we should think as Salt Lakers is this was really a binary decision.
Yeah.
We either do this deal and we keep the Utah Jazz and the new hockey team, or we lose both.
Yeah.
And that was the reality of it. So the economic option of losing both, it has already been proven out over the last 40 years or so. We know what the economy is with a downtown that loses that team.
Yeah. And I'm in the abundance world where we can do both of these.
Yeah,
we can take care of the human service needs and have a sports and entertainment and convention and culture district downtown. We can do these. They're going to be actually complementary.
Well, and I also continue to think one of the things that's exciting about our state and the size of our state is that the problems are big, right? When we think about...
They're growth problems,
but they're also... We're within a span of trouble that we could still solve them. Like, they're not so unwieldy, that they're not so profound, they're not so deep. We're not dealing with poverty like some states are, though we certainly have issues around poverty, childhood poverty in particular. The issues around hunger in our state aren't as profound as they are in others, but 12%, I think, are food insecure. That's too much, right? Like, these are problems that are solvable. Mm-hmm. But
I got another one on my list here. Yeah, another one on my list here. And I say this as a active member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and who has a great enthusiasm for the reopening of the Salt Lake Temple.
Yeah.
Which my understanding is will bring, do you know the number of how many millions?
5 million.
Million.
Okay, 5 million visitors to our state. And you know, something to our listeners, I don't know if it's going to happen, but it seems to me like we're going to be closing Main Street for about 5 or 6 months as we do this. That's just, you don't have to comment on that, Mayor. I'm just kind of saying that would be a good idea to have a promenade.
We're kind of in the receiving of the conversation end. And
okay.
So, yeah.
Who knows? Yeah, but
we're looking at their ideas.
But, okay, so I just have to say on that, though, Main Street is a place where I do feel like I look around and I'm like, what are we doing? What's going on?
Yeah, we've been talking about Main Street becoming a pedestrian corridor since the 60s. And my administration has been saying, no, we're going to do it, which is why we've had the open streets a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're special.
But that doesn't mean entirely closing it to traffic.
Yeah.
I think it's just like seeing businesses close there and then stuff that just sits empty. It feels like, what a time. If there's this, you know, we have this reopening, we have this opportunity. Yeah. I would love to just see it. I'd love to see it activated with spaces for children, which I know sounds crazy, but like,
no, it doesn't
would be
sound crazy.
Fun.
We want it's families downtown.
Downtown.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got a few more.
You're good. I foreshadow this, though. So the you bring in all these visitors and you have a promenade down Main Street that is celebrating our state and has art installations and has activities for children.
Yes, I want that.
This is going to happen.
Yeah.
Yes. And we did it during the month of June on the weekends.
Uh-huh.
There was a whole block for kids. There was a farmer's market block.
I could hear this past weekend when it was there, and I could hear it. I didn't get into it, but I could, you know, sense
we're trying
the
it on.
Activity.
Yeah.
The shoe fits.
Mayor, ballpark. You have a, you used to represent the ballpark, if I remember, when you were on the city council. You now represent as the mayor. But what's the plan for ballpark now?
We just recently announced the final design for phase one, which is a nod to the historic elements, keeping the west side, so the east-facing seats of the ballpark stadium itself, it's about 3,500 seats, demolishing that northern portion and making shops, bars, restaurants, activation space on the street-facing side, West Temple, and then turning that green space of the ballpark into a community asset. Mm. That grass is gorgeous, but the kids in that neighborhood have never touched it.
Yeah.
They're not allowed on there. And this first phase will transform that part of, well, the historic part, really future looking, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's family sized aging in place housing, home ownership options of housing in the future phases, new library, where right now we have a ballpark library lab across the street. We're trying that on for size two. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a space that's active 365 days a year.
I have great enthusiasm for this. Investment will do things. And that neighborhood is in such close proximity to the downtown that
there's nothing else like it.
Yeah. Mayor, we have less than a minute. Give us a peek into the 2034 Olympic Winter Games. What's in store for our
We're
going
to knock it out of the water as a state. And I know we will, because we don't have to say, what is our legacy? What is our culture? We are an Olympic city, period. Mm-hmm. We have been since 2002. We're going to make that even bigger. We love sport. We love the winter time. We're not afraid to come out in the snow. And I think Salt Lakers, Utahns should plan to feel connected to the games as soon as this coming winter in February when Milano Cortina begins. Our legacy is alive right now, and I think you're going to start to have opportunities to come celebrate it and feel it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Shireen, we're bringing it to a close. So grateful that we have the mayor here.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
And thanks for inviting me.
We love having you here in our city.
Come to Salt Lake City.
Yeah. You go. And that's a wrap, and a thanks to our producer, Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening, everybody.